Welcome in, welcome in. Going through my quick sound check, making sure my levels is good, making sure my levels are good. Just waiting on that confirmation on that sound check. Alright, the sound check is good. Alright, let me get on the screen for y'all. Let me get on the screen. Alright, we got rid of that intro. Let's get this screen right. Let's get this screen right. Let's throw this up here for now. Alright, there we go. Welcome in, welcome in. Sorry about the late start. But welcome in to this Friday before week one. Friday before week one, football is finally here. Now you get to see who really understands football and who's just a talking head. Got a great show lined up today. Of course, we're going to hit a lot of hot topics. You are now tuned in to Eliminate the Gray with Off the Record D, where real sports talk live each week. I break down the biggest stories in sports, give you honest takes, fueled by logic, life experience, and time spent in team sports. No hot takes for clicks, just real perspective. I call it how I see it, whether it's breaking down a big game or calling out the media for how they spin a story. If you want sports talk with no agenda, you're in the right place. Shout out to y'all for being here. So we have a big game on Sunday, Browns versus the Cincinnati Bengals. In Cleveland, Ohio, at Huntington Bank Field, and nobody cares. Nobody's talking about it. Tickets are still available. Beast, what's going on? Shout out to you for being here. Nobody is talking about it, and I'm going to break down the reasons why nobody's talking about it. All right, first things first, Eliminate the Gray podcast. You see the thumbnail or you see the podcast cover on the screen. You can get my podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. So that's Apple, Spotify, wherever you choose to listen to podcasts, YouTube Music. This episode is usually available within a couple hours. I have this episode. I got some stuff to do today, but this episode will be available at the latest tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Also, since I do a longer podcast, I like to get timestamps in there for you if you want to double back and just go to certain parts. So same, by tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. timestamps will be in there if you just want to, you know, jump back in and go to a certain spot. Next, what are we going to let me get my bearings with me. All right, so we're going to get this podcast covered down and we're going to get to this thumbnail here. So the thumbnail you see on the screen, I got a really great idea. I believe it was Jeffrey. I believe it was Beast who in my last live stream, I was kind of talking about going over the top quarterbacks who are draft eligible. So I did it last weekend. I watched all the game film of these top eight quarterbacks. So if you just look, you got Drew Aller, you got Cade Klubnik, you got Arch Manning, you got Sam Levitt, you have Garrett Nussmeier, you have Fernando Mendoza, you have Carson Beck, and you have Lenoris Sellers. So those eight quarterbacks are draft eligible. So I watched all their film, did a breakdown of it. I'm going to do this every week of the college season just so I can have a running diary of how I felt about these quarterbacks in real time, because the Browns are all in on the quarterback. Hello, Miss Brown. How are you doing today? Good morning to you. Shout out to you for being here. So Tuesdays at 10 a.m., you'll get my video recap of how the top college quarterbacks who are draft eligible did in this previous week. That is the thumbnail. You will see it updated weekly as I knock those out. So let's get to the first thing. A lot of interesting things being said this week. A lot of Arch Manning, people backtracking, people defending him, people saying he's going to be fine. I just been seeing a whole lot of stuff this week, and it's two things I say. The line is set with how far you allow people to go that you don't like. The other thing to watch for is watch how people make excuses and defend people they do like. So if y'all have been watching, y'all have seen all the excuses for Arch Manning this week. We're going to kind of get into that a little bit. I find it comical. I always said we need to see more of him, and I just left it at that. I'm not jumping out there saying he's generational this, he's that. Nope, I'm not doing it. Not doing it. Also, we got people in Cleveland Radio. I don't understand why Shador Sanders fans are making this a Shador Sanders Arch Manning thing. Okay, keep playing silly. We got Bull on UCSS. I don't understand why people are saying it's all this discourse with the Shador fans. Okay, keep playing silly. So we're going to break it down. We're going to give you the reasons why. We're going to show you the examples. But first, what we must do is we must go back to something I called months ago. So I got a video. It's titled, Don't Believe the Lies. I did this video 3 months ago when I was getting way less views. I had way less subscribers and less people tapped in. So this is a good way for me to show people that I have been saying things for months and now they are coming to show. So let's rewind this thing back. This is me speaking on how they did people pre and post draft and how we wouldn't forget. So let's go.
You know, what's his name? Mike Florio and Sims. They've been talking a lot of stuff about the quarterbacks, but they're going to kind of change their tune a little bit here. So let me find the right point where they're going to start talking about them.
I'm going to articulate this because you're speaking to one of the things that is very tiring about the whole pre-draft industrial complex.
It is, yes.
There's this effort to turn it all into a mathematical equation, and there's an obsession over value. And, oh, no, you can't take this guy here. That's a reach. Oh, if you get this guy here, that's a great value pick. Nobody knows what any of these guys are going to become at the NFL level. And when the grades come out, and I don't know if you did draft grades, and I apologize in advance if I'm going to paint with too broad a brush.
No.
Draft grades are asinine.
Right.
Nobody knows what any of these guys are going to do. That is the one big factor that always gets overlooked in the Mel Kiper obsession with, oh, did you get enough value? Oh, did you reach? Oh, that's the best player available. You should take him because I say he's the best player available. We don't know what any one of these players is going to do until they play. And what happens is, and this is what is so insane about it, by the time we know, there's never a checklist or a report card. And people say, well, why don't you do draft grades 3 years after the fact? Because nobody cares by then. We're on to the next draft. It's the damnedest thing. It's like this big.
So y'all just get to say all this stuff pre-draft. The draft happens. Y'all get to be wrong by a lot. And then nobody gets to question you. This is where earlier when I went off on that tangent, old media doesn't realize how like YouTube works. A lot of YouTube is about receipts. A lot of YouTube is about not forgetting what these people tell us. A lot of YouTube is about remembering that Colin Cowherd said that the Pittsburgh Steelers should trade TJ Watt, Pickens to move up to number 3 to draft Shador. And then kill Shador and say he bombed all these interviews. YouTube lets us keep receipts and lets us remember what y'all are saying. Y'all think that it just goes away. Why do you think I still remember all those teams passed up on Lamar Jackson and Polian from the Colts said he should be a wide receiver? Y'all don't understand the storm that's coming. As these college kids get more popular, more famous, their fans, their supporters are not going to let y'all forget how y'all crapped on them pre-draft and then just move on to the next draft. We're not letting y'all do that. Y'all used to get away with that. Y'all have to update how you report these things. You have to. If I say something wrong or if I pick a team and that team doesn't win a series, that team doesn't win a game, people come and they can call me out about it. I'm okay with it because I expect it. Old media, they don't realize that's coming. They don't realize it's a lot of bots online, but it's a lot of real people online who are watching y'all and who are paying attention with how you view situations, and they are going to bring it back up next year. All the people who tried to say because CJ Stroud didn't do well.
So y'all see, I've been on this kick. I've been saying these things. This didn't just start. I called it out in real time. In real time, I was saying they just get to crush people and move forward. And I said, we're going to keep receipts. I said, we're going to keep receipts. I said, these young college athletes that are coming into the NFL, they have a following. Their following is not just going to let you crap on their name and keep it moving. You see it, Ms. Brown. They flow like the wind. One day they saying this, next day they saying this. They change up. I always say you have to have a philosophy with how you speak on things, because then there's a baseline for things you won't do. That's why I always say you got to have a philosophy. So I was calling it then. I was saying, hey, they're not going to let them forget this. They're going to remember this. I was telling people the storm is coming. I had people, so I clipped this up and I put out shorts and I put it on TikTok. And people told me Shedeur Sanders fans would not make a difference. And I was like, y'all crazy. I was like, y'all don't understand how big a following he has. Shedeur Sanders fans got ESPN Cleveland to put out a stat tracker because they didn't believe the ESPN, they didn't believe the Cleveland reporters who were speaking on stats since rookie minicamp. The pressure from Shador's following made that happen. I was saying that. Now you're going to have people saying, I don't understand why, you know, Shedeur Sanders fans are taking this and saying Arch Manning isn't that. Maybe because Arch Manning might be everything that they said Shedeur was. He might be here just because of his last name. He might be getting recognition because of his last name. He might not be that good. You ever think about that? Did he do anything in his first or his third start in his junior year that would lead us to believe he's anything more than his last name? Hey, it's just a question. I'm just going to ask the questions. I'm asking the question. Did y'all see anything from Arch Manning that said, hey, we should tank. We should give away this whole year so we can get Arch Manning? No, nobody saw it. So now, as they were proven wrong, they're going to start to backtrack. So we're going to get to Paul Feinbaum, who said Arch Manning was going to do so well. He was going to light up the Ohio State. Ohio State had no chance to win versus Texas. Let's go. Let's see what he says.
I'm glad you brought that up, Paul, because, listen, I get it. There's a reason to be excited. And Texas lost a lot to the NFL now, but I believe they were given a benefit of the doubt, and I believe the quarterback was treated so unfairly in the preseason because of his last name, and now because of it, the morning after, the kid has been taken from here to as low as you can get, and it's everyone's fault except Arch Manning's.
Yeah, listen, I'll take whatever blame comes my way, but what happens is we buy into a narrative, we feed it, and what's really interesting, Matt, is forget what I say or you or any other pundit. Vegas also is culpable here. They made him the favorite to win the Heisman, and I think that just when you throw out some hot take and then you look.
Is it how you feel about a quarterback or a player, or is it how Vegas feels? Do you know that if enough people bet a certain thing, it can move the line in Vegas? So if you can't use your analysis to break down if somebody's good or not, you go blame Vegas when you're wrong? Come on, man. Get out of here. All right, let's see what Beast got to say. Beast says, it don't matter how bad Arch do, he will still be drafted in the first round. You are correct, my friend. Arch Manning is getting all the excuses made for him in the world. So I did a live stream and I was, you know, giving my analysis on the game. During the game, I heard the announcer say on the broadcast, man, I feel bad that this is his third start and he has to go against this Ohio State defense. I said, come on, man. I always pay attention to who they start defending, who they start protecting. So when they start protecting Dillon Gabriel, I was like, hey, it's something here. When they started protecting Arch Manning after he didn't perform, hey, it's something here. So that's the way I look at it. But that was Paul Feinbaum. He was the one who said he had no shot. Now we're going to get to more people. Let's see what Desmond Howard says about Arch Manning. Now, this is, to me, this is the most honest I've heard somebody be about Arch Manning. Let's go, Desmond.
Let's talk about Arch Manning. Your opinion of his start at the shoe is what?
It was predictable. I went on Stephen A. Smith's show the Friday before the Ohio State game, and I went on First Take, and I was telling them that I thought that the all of the hype and Heisman talk around him was unwarranted. I said that unless he was a guy who was on stage last year at the Heisman ceremony as a legitimate finalist, he doesn't warrant having his name mentioned in the same breath as that trophy. If you think he's, you know, somewhat a quarterback who's going to have a successful career, or a successful season, why don't you start talking about the Davey O'Brien Award or the Johnny Unitas Award, you know, whatever those quarterback awards, but not.
You know why they can't say anything about the Johnny Unitas Award? It's because Shador won it, and they discredited it so much that they had to go straight Heisman with him. You see? See? You're going to get your answers. You're going to get your reasons why people do what they do. They discredit, they act like Shador didn't win no awards, they act like Shador's stats didn't matter, and they used that to tear Shador apart because they said, oh, well, he won the best quarterback award, but he didn't win the Heisman, so now Arch Manning got to go straight to the Heisman. He can't win the best quarterback award because then people just pull up the receipts where you try to discredit Shador for it. He hitting some points, y'all.
Not the best football player in the country. And also said that he was a guy who he didn't jump out at me on tape. I mean, he had moments, and they're going to show those big moments on SportsCenter. But if you really watch the tape, you know, there was nothing consistent that made you think he was the best football player in college football. And now he goes to
Miss Brown, you are correct. Arch didn't do nothing. And he did the gun shooting that Tom was talking about. He said everybody has a target on them. He flipped it and said, we got the scope on them. We got the red dot on them. Well, maybe he was playing Call of Duty and he wasn't playing football because they didn't have a red dot on anybody. And if they did, they missed every time. So that was an epic fail. It's funny that you said that as soon as Desmond Howard was saying he didn't do anything to pop off the page. I watched the entire game. I watched all those quarterbacks. I see one throw where I was like, man, that was a good throw. I didn't see seven throws where I'm like, Arch Manning is the guy. I didn't see it. And they want us to believe that we witnessed that. There's going to be other people who are going to say they witnessed Arch Manning jump off the page in that game. It's crazy, but they're going to do it. Let's keep going, Desmond.
To Columbus, right, Rich? This is the beautiful part about all of this. People don't want to really criticize him as harshly because he is a Manning. And they want to stay in good favor with the Mannings, right? This is a big name in our sport. But so what they do is they make it seem like Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator for Ohio State, just called this brilliant game that kept Steve Sarkisian and Arch Manning off balance for four whole quarters. Now, Matt Patricia did call a very good game. There's no doubt about that. But I saw guys on SportsCenter and other shows pulling like three plays and showing how he may have confused Arch Manning with the look or a secondary switch at the last minute. And I'm watching the film, and I can show you 10 to 12 plays where guys were running wide open and he either just didn't hit them with the ball or he didn't see these guys. And it wasn't that complex or that complicated. So he struggled the way I thought he would struggle because, you know, even though he's been in the system for 3 years, you look at him, he's never really played in these meaningful games. So the hype was just blown way out of proportion for Arch Manning.
Man, what an opinion right there, Desmond. So
Rich Eisen don't know what to do. Rich Eisen's like, man, what an opinion right there. It's true. The thing that I thought that I would see from Arch Manning was I thought I would see fundamentals. He's been going to the Manning Passing Academy all these years. I thought his footwork would be good. I thought his mechanics were good. His footwork and mechanics were terrible. That's why he missed so many throws. It was all bad. He was doing crazy arm angles for no reason on five-yard passes. He was throwing bullets on five-yard passes when all he had to do was just do a routine pass and just get it out of there. His footwork wasn't good. That's why his throws were off target when he was going further down the field. What you want to see is, you want to see the quarterbacks, if they're right-handed quarterback, you want to see that left shoulder aiming where they want to go with the football. You want to see their feet also set so they can throw the football. We did not see that with Arch Manning. That was the biggest thing I noticed. I was like, the fundamentals aren't there. So when everybody is making these excuses for him, the fundamentals aren't there. And that's the one thing he should have, because he's supposedly been brought up and made to be a quarterback. So Rich Eisen, he was taken aback by that. He didn't really know what to say. Let's see how he follows this up before we get to the next one.
What do you see for Arch going forward? An upward progression, starts to win some games. There's a big game against Florida, Georgia coming. Like, that's to the college football playoffs. And is that what you see here moving forward? Maybe not at the podium in Manhattan.
Rich, we know one thing, okay? We know one thing. Me and you, we know one thing. In order to go in Columbus and beat Ohio State, first and foremost, you have to be tough. That's what it takes to beat Ohio State. You're going to have to be tough. When they got the ball in the red zone inside the five-yard line and they couldn't punch it in, and I can't put that on Arch, that showed me that at that point, they're not tough enough to go on the road and beat a team the quality of Ohio State. Now, moving forward, you said what's going to happen. Any analyst who talks about Arch Manning, they always wraps it up with, yeah, but he's going to be fine. He's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. But in this sport, with that name, being fine just doesn't cut it. Being okay just doesn't cut it. That's not what they're known for. That's not what he's in Texas for, to be fine, to be okay.
I hope y'all are catching this. This is the most honest you're going to hear somebody speak on Arch Manning. Nobody is speaking on Arch Manning this way. Rich Eisen glitched. He couldn't even formulate a good question to follow up with after what he said. So, kind of, do you see, is it an upward trajectory? He asking him all these things. Come on, man. It's the name. It's everything. Hey, they talked about Bronny. The last name, he's a second round. He was the 55th pick. He's a flyer. They said Arch Manning. Teams are going to tank for Arch Manning. And now people are saying he's going to do fine. Come on, man. What are we doing? If nothing else, Arch Manning should have the best fundamentals, meaning footwork and mechanics, in college. He should be a lot past everybody else's when it comes to the technical side. Before you even get to the physical, he should be far past them, and he is not. And we are seeing why he couldn't beat out Quinn Ewers. And everybody said, oh, he should get in. He shouldn't be behind Quinn Ewers. We see why he was not above Quinn Ewers. So I just wanted to show you all a couple things on bigger shows, how they're speaking on Arch Manning. First, they're dancing around it. Desmond Howard going to give you the real. And now let's take it to Cleveland. We got to go to Cleveland and see how did they handle this in Cleveland. So first, we're going to get to 92.3 The Fan. Or actually, no. Yeah, we got 92.3 The Fan. Here we go. 92.3 The Fan, Anthony Lima.
Seen the Shedeur Sanders people make everything about themselves was just unbelievable.
About themselves.
About Shedeur Sanders. No, at no point was I watching Arch Manning on Saturday get his ass kicked by Matt Patricia and the Ohio State defense. At no point was I thinking about Shedeur Sanders. And yet, I turned on social media, went to my phone, said, how? What does this have to do with the third string quarterback for the Cleveland Browns? I was amazed. Was I missing something? Like, we did talk.
You're missing a lot. You're missing a lot. Let's just tell you some of the things you're missing. Pre-draft, what do we hear? Pre-draft, we heard next year's draft class was going to be better for quarterbacks. We heard that pre-draft. So this is pre-April. We've been hearing that. What month are we in? We're in September. So if you've been hearing this for how many months now, next year's draft class is going to be better. That's the first thing you're missing. The second thing you're missing is everybody said we would not talk about Shador if it wasn't for his last name. We watched Shador at Jackson State produce. We watched Shador at Colorado produce. Everybody said it's his last name. It's not his production. But then when you look at his production, he's in top categories for producing, and then everybody comes back to his last name. We get Arch Manning, who was a Heisman front runner going into the year, Texas number one ranked team in the nation, based on Arch Manning and players they're bringing back. He only played two games, hasn't even thrown 100 passes in college prior to that game against Ohio State. Which one is more based on the name and which one is based on productivity? So when you have people for all these months saying next year is going to be better, you have people saying we only talk about Shador because of his last name, not because of his production, then throw Arch Manning into it, what's going to happen? Everybody's going to look at Arch Manning and say, well, he better be way better than Shador. See, the Cleveland media was never following Shador. They was never following the criticism of Shador. They were never following the critique of Shador. So now they're puzzled and confused. I just don't understand. Why are they looking at Arch Manning this way? Do some research, man. Do some research. Ken is going to try to bring him up to speed a little bit, but Ken ain't even going to be able to do it.
You know, over the last year, that when we were saying nice things about Shador Sanders, we were like, hey, if you're saying nepotism, why does nepotism work for Arch Manning? Like, we called that out. But now when the games are actually going on, like, and it's up to Arch Manning and it's up to Texas and it's up to these other quarterbacks at these other schools that we mentioned in the first hour of the show, why was Shador Sanders' name being compared at all times? Like, Shador Sanders is in the NFL now.
Let me get to your message here, Beast. The Cleveland Browns not even giving the QBs they got right now a chance. Now they're talking about getting another one already. This is why the Cleveland Browns is so sad. There we go. How can you tell me you're giving somebody a fair shot when you are publicly going out to see these other quarterbacks? I don't care. Do your work. But you showing up on the sidelines with the owner, with Kevin Stefanski. Kevin Stefanski's first time saying he's been out there on like a recruiting trip. So, exactly. Ms. Brown, you got it. They are definitely hyping him up because of his name. They are definitely trying to bring him into the same view as Shador to try to build up his following, build up the hype, because there's nothing else there. So the Browns are doing this to themselves. Be like Lil Wayne. Move in silence. Move in silence. You don't got to be out here. You don't got to be all in the videos. You don't got to be all in front of the camera. You know what I'm saying? You don't got to do that. You go recruit, but do it in the background. Don't tell me you're developing guys while also looking for their replacement, because y'all aren't a good enough football team to do that. Jeffrey, that's funny, man. So just to get off the Browns, we're going to pause that for a second. We're going to get to this comment. Bro, you know football season is back before a snap happens. Somebody gets ejected. That was silly, man. That was real silly. The spit thing. You got Dak spitting by his feet, and then you got him spitting on Dak. It's just one of those things. I'm happy that they actually went back and found what Dak did also, but that didn't help them in the game. I think if Carter's in that game goes totally different. Let's get into a quick recap of that Eagles-Cowboys. It's game one of the season. A lot of penalties. It was sloppy. It was chippy. The Cowboys sold out to stop the run a lot, which should have opened up the pass.
Philly almost fumbled the game at the end by not being a little bit more aggressive. On their second, on Philly's second to last drive on first down, when Dallas loaded the box and they just ran Saquon right into that box, that's when they should have went over the top. They should have did a play action rollout with Jalen Hurts, and they should have been looking for AJ Brown or Devontae Smith. They should have hit them deep because they could have potentially got another score in there. So that was a mistake, being too conservative. I've seen the Browns go extra conservative too early and come back to bite them. Jalen Carter be crashing out. He needs to stop. Beast, you are correct. That was the knock on him coming out, was how would he make decisions. His decision-making has not been good, and it's crazy because he's a two-time All-Pro, so he has to be better. Then at the end of the game, the Cowboys, Dak Prescott looks good. He overthrew CeeDee Lamb on that fourth down play because he had CeeDee. He needs to hit him in stride. You don't need CeeDee diving for a pass when he got the guy beat. So it's game one. One thing I will tell you, you saw when it was the middle of the game, they definitely missed Micah Parsons. Jalen Hurts, before they actually went to the break, Jalen Hurts had so much time to throw the ball. See, I put that game, CeeDee Lamb cost Dallas the game. How do you drop those two easy passes? See, the drop that I thought was the worst one was where it was the deep pass and it went through his hands and it almost, the defender almost intercepted. I think that was the worst one. Some of the other ones I don't think was as bad. I think that was the most egregious one. I think that also it was so predictable what Philly was going to do. It was very predictable. So the Cowboys defense couldn't get a stop at the end with the game close. So it was a combination. The easy target would be CeeDee Lamb, but I think their defense not being basically able to do anything with a run in Jalen Hurts was the problem. I think that was more the problem. He ran for, what, two touchdowns? His scrambles, his last scramble, once they went five wide, they didn't have a spy on him. Stuff like that, he just spread them out, and you knew as soon as he didn't see his first read, he was going to go. So I think the defense more so was the problem. Pickens cost them because, remember, when they were driving – and Pickens got that personal foul, that 15-yard penalty when they were in within the red zone. I believe they were inside the 10. So Pickens cost them two with that penalty. Yeah, I got some Tony Grossi stuff coming up later in the show. He is way off on something he says and what he says he's gonna do. But good, because I did want to get that recap in. So shout out to Jeffrey for the question so I can get that recap in. Let's see if Ken can bring it back home for Anthony.
Nothing that I was watching with Texas at Arch Manning had anything to do with whether or not Shador Sanders is going to succeed. But I saw a bunch of Shador fans who, there's nothing to argue with Shador right now. He's not playing. Is he even the practice squad quarterback? Like, what is he? Is he the emergency quarterback? I know the Browns signed Bailey Zappi. They made that official last week. Is he still on the team? Like, he's just one of the guys that's going to be backing up Joe Flacco, and he's way down on the pecking order. So why did that have anything to do with what I was watching on Saturday trying to size up potential future Browns quarterbacks?
Well, because I think you're being a little naive there. I really do. I can see exactly why people are drawing conclusion to that. You're going to see a lot of Shador things because he plays for the Cleveland Browns, or at least he's on the roster. If Bailey Zappi plays before him, I'm going to go nuts, by the way. But he's on the Browns roster. So he's a member of this football team, and you cover the Cleveland Browns. And there's been so many things. Again, you said at the very beginning of this that so much of the, Shador's nepotism, Shador's this because of his father. Okay, but people are thinking the same thing with Arch Manning. And there were a lot of folks waiting to see, because this guy has been propped up as he is the next big thing by all of us. And I go, man, there's got to be so many different people out there that say what they see is going to be a great football player that I have to take their word for it. And then he went out there and he struggled. Now, you could say, and I would agree with you, if you went, yeah, it's against Ohio State, there's 105,000 people in the stadium.
Yeah.
And they're all pulling against you.
By the way, Shador sucked against the best competition in college football.
This is a start against the very, very, very.
That comeback right there. Let me hit your comment first, Jeffrey. Exactly. I like how physical the game was. I like how they weren't playing soft. So I like that too. Now let's get back to this comment that he just said there.
Yes, he does. Actually, with the owner of the Cleveland Browns, they got a relationship. The owner of the Cleveland Browns is a very big booster for Tennessee, and they do have a relationship. So you are right there. The Mannings do have a relationship with the Browns owner. What he just said right there is the rebuttal that everybody does, and it's comparing apples to oranges. So he just said, oh, when Shador played the best competition, he didn't play well. The big difference is Shador did not play for a team that sent, I want to say Texas sent 12 guys to the NFL last year. They sent 12 guys to the NFL. So that's how you can gauge how much talent is around a guy. Ohio State sent 14 guys to the NFL. That's a different level of talent than the Colorado having, what they got, 4 or 5 guys who made a 53-man roster. They got Shador. They got Green in Jacksonville. They got Travis Hunter in Jacksonville. They have, they got more. They got LaJonte Webster in Baltimore. They got Jimmy Horn in Carolina. And they have, I can't think of the receiver's name in Green Bay. So they got 6 who came off the team and went there. So it's not one of those things that you can't really compare the two. And that's the easy thing that people try to do. That's the easy thing that they try to do. Beast, how is Shador a Nepo baby? Even if his dad wasn't Deion, he still would have made it to the NFL. You are correct right there, Beast. He would have made it to the NFL regardless. At this point, if Arch Manning was to come out this year and make it to the NFL because of his name, it would not be because of what he's shown us. Very similar to, it will be, people would have to use, that's a fact, Jeffrey. You are so right. Shador only had one offensive weapon as well. His best offensive weapon play on defense too, which being Travis Hunter. They tried to knock Shador for playing with Travis Hunter. So you see how they just jump all over the place. So remember the clip I played of me around right after the draft, I said people wouldn't forget. Now the people who just are playing oblivious to what's happening, they're doing that because they don't want to acknowledge what really happened. That's what happens. I don't work for 92.3 The Fan. I don't work for ESPN Cleveland. So some of the things that I say will be me taking shots at other people in the media. They don't want to do that. They're trying to stick to the code. You know what I'm saying? They're trying to stick to the code like, man, I don't really want to take shots at, you know, people who do the same thing as me, because then they're going to take shots at me. That's old news. Actually, it's in my clip. Let me get to it, because this is the perfect time. Let's see. Where is it? At some point, I'm going to say something about this.
On some new standardized test that they try to run to determine if a guy's going to be good in the NFL, which doesn't have anything, from what I'm hearing, doesn't have anything to do with football, and say picks and all this stuff for next year's draft for a quarterback. What happens, we just went the last 15 years. How many times do we see 5, 6 quarterbacks that actually do well in the last 15 years?
Jeffrey, nobody brings up Howard, how many offensive weapons he had. People thought the Browns should have drafted him in the first or second round. You got a very good point there. UCSS, Jay Crawford on UCSS wanted the Browns to draft him. I didn't see it in Will Howard. I see Will Howard being a backup. When you got all that talent around you, that's how many guys could you have put in Will Howard's spot and they would have won the Heisman? So many guys you could have put there, they would have won the Heisman. Because you got to think about, the receivers he had, the two running backs he had. You got to think about the offensive line he's playing with. So many other guys would have won the Heisman playing at Ohio State. And you won. You got hot at the right time, but those weapons definitely helped you. So that's key. I think it's in here where I'm going to bring up people bringing receipts. Let's see.
Maybe one time where it was about 4 quarterbacks that did well. So quarterbacks staying longer, that shouldn't be a problem, right? Y'all got to get with the times. We're not letting y'all brush under the rug. Y'all think y'all can brush it under the rug. We're not letting y'all brush it under the rug. We're going to remember we're taking receipts. And we're going to play these receipts, and we're going to post it in your comments, and we're going to tell you about things that you are right and things that you are wrong. And the difference is we already know to expect this. Y'all don't even know what's coming. There it is. So I called this months ago. This is not me just having this stance right now. I called this months ago. I knew that this situation would happen. All right, Beast, what do you think about Shador pocket presence? I keep hearing people say his pocket presence is terrible. I think his pocket presence is determined based on the quality of line he has. We saw when he was in Carolina, we saw him slide, shift. We didn't see him retreat backwards as much. Bart, what you doing? All right, let me. Man, oh man. My bad, Jeffy. I'm gonna read your comments. I see him. My bot went a little crazy right there. So back to Shador. We saw in Carolina on short notice, his pocket presence was way better than it was when he played versus the Rams. So I think it's predicated on the offensive line. I think when you played as bad as offensive line he had in college, you're going to, as soon as it feels like it's turning into what I've seen before, you're going to jump the gun. You're going to get uneasy. Your feet going to get shaky. You're going to move around a lot because you already feel, dang, I probably can't rely on this offensive line. So when Shador gets to that point where he can't rely on the offensive line, he's going to move around. His pocket presence is not going to be good. When he feels like he can rely on the offensive line and he can rely on, you know, the running backs picking up the right blocks, you just saw it in Carolina. So it's funny. People are twisting themselves up when they look at the Shador stuff. They want to act like everything he did in Carolina didn't matter, which I think that was more impressive. Short notice, and then him actually playing and playing well, and you seeing his pocket presence with a better. He only went up from the guys who weren't making the team to the twos, and he looked that much better. So people only want to use the game versus the Rams, but at the same time, we're not supposed to use the game versus Ohio State for Arch Manning to critique him. So it's crazy. So let me summarize that shortly. He has things to work on his pocket presence. It's not perfect. I also believe it's tied to the quality of the line he plays with. So when he plays with a better offensive line, I think his pocket presence would be better. And I think that's for a lot of quarterbacks. I think that's just a quarterback thing, especially quarterbacks who've been hit a lot. Let's see your next comment. Jeffrey, but if the Browns is looking for a quarterback, why didn't they call up Dallas last year when they had Cooper Rush and see if they were willing to move off Dak Prescott? In theory, I hear what you're saying. I don't want Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott is the most expensive game manager in the NFL. If I'm going to pay $63 million for a quarterback, give me Patrick Mahomes. Give me Josh Allen. Give me Lamar Jackson. Give me Joe Burrow. If it's not one of those four names, I don't want a quarterback for $60-plus million a year. Dak Prescott does not take them to the next level. I don't want it. I don't want it. So, yeah, I pass. I pass on the Dak Prescott thing. I want the Browns to use their evaluation skills, get and develop a quarterback. That's what I want the Browns to do. We tried to swing and miss. I looked it up. We have a quarterback that plays for, I think the number is 10 years, and it might even be 8 years. When a quarterback plays for 8 years for one team and then they go to another team, the likelihood of them making the playoffs is so low, it's not even crazy. It's so low. I think they got less than like a 20% chance to make the playoffs on the new team. So I don't want the quarterback that's leaving another team. You can't build your team around trying to use somebody else's quarterback. You have to draft and develop your own quarterback. So I don't want the expensive veteran. It doesn't work. You can look at Matthew Stafford. I think it's only three guys who actually took their team to the playoffs after they played for 10 years. It was Tom Brady, Matthew Stafford, and it's one more that I can't think of off the top of my head. But it's not a long list of guys who played all these years for one team and then went somewhere else and had success. So, and it's only two of them who won the Super Bowl, and that's Matt Stafford and Tom Brady, if I remember correctly. So I don't believe that's the way to do it. I don't believe that's the way to go. I think it sounds good and it looks good, but you set your team back too much. Shador has to learn to take the underneath stuff as well, because there was a few checkdowns on underneath stuff he could have took. I agree with you. Burst the Rams, Shador missed three reads. Three reads right off the bat. I was like, dang, he missed that. But I will say this. It's easy to say kind of in a blanket or just in a bucket, you should just, like a lot of people say, oh, he just has to get the ball out quicker. Well, you got to go play by play. So I watched that. I rewatched the Rams game three times. A lot of those routes were designed long or deeper routes. He was supposed to be doing five-step drops. When you're doing a five-step drop and the offensive line can't give you time to get to the back, your back foot on that drop, it's going to be a failure. The defense won that rep. So it's easy to say, oh, he held the ball for 3.9 seconds is the stat that a lot of people like to say. But you got to go play by play and look at what are they running. I always said to people who said that in a blanket versus the Rams, I said, what coverage was he trying to beat each play? So the Rams disguised cover one man really well. So what they were doing was they were starting off in a two high shell. They had the two high shells. So you're thinking, man, we got these cover two beaters. So we ran all these cover two beaters. The problem was right at the snap or right after the snap, you had the safety coming down. The safety was taking away the check down to the running back. Or if the running back was standing and blocking, the safety was just coming down and they were just loading up the middle of the field. So a lot of times, Kevin Stefanski was not calling the play that could beat. He wasn't calling the plays that could beat that coverage. It did get to a point very late where once he identified, I think it was the third drive versus the Rams, he identified, man, they're actually doing man-to-man cover one. Then he started running the mesh routes that can beat it. And that's one of the throws that I'm like, dang, Shador missed that tight end. Also, another thing that Kevin Stefanski needed to do that he didn't do, when did the Browns have success versus the Rams running the ball? Because you have to run the ball. You got to get to third and manageable. You can't be in third and long. You might as well clock it. It's not going to work. The stats on third and eight plus are very bad for success for offenses. And they ended up that way a lot because they had the most success not running the ball under center, but running the ball from the shotgun with three receivers, one tight end, one running back. They had the most success. You can go back and look at it. I watched all these plays. They had the most success. Do you think that's the way they ran the ball the most? No. He kept putting them back under center. Under center, they were selling out for the run, and the run wasn't getting anywhere. So we're going into second and nine. We're going into second and eight. And then we're not getting that on second down because now you got to go to try to get more. And then we're going into third and long. So it's easy to say, oh, Shador should have had, you know, he should have checked down and he should have went to the quick routes. Kevin Stefanski didn't necessarily call those first two drives for him to take advantage of that. And then Shador started going to the check down. He would go to the check down early, but when he would get to the check down, the safety was coming down, taking away the running back coming out the backfield. So I watched it. I was trying to explain to people that the defense won so many reps in that game, it wasn't funny. They won so many reps. So it's what you going to do when the defense win? Then the times where Shador was trying to step up, they could have given the time for the slow, long development routes. So it was a combination. That's why I said Shador did bad things. The offensive line was bad. The play calls were bad. Because if you can't identify what the defense is running and you call plays that aren't effective versus that style of defense, it's a lose. You might as well chalk it up. It's a wrap. So I saw that. I saw it in real time. I saw it a lot. And I was like, man, this was just a bad game plan. They didn't run any draw plays until it was third and 25 when Shador took that terrible sack where he kept running backwards. They didn't run any screen plays. Now, the reason why those plays would be important is because they get the defensive line off balance. And you had screen plays in the play sheet because you call screen plays with Joe Flacco. You had a drive where you call multiple screen plays. You call screen plays with Dylan Gabriel. When it came to Shador, you never called a screen play. What is the value of the screen play? The screen play gets the lineman second guessing. He needed help from the play caller to slow down the defensive line, and he didn't get it. So
It was a completely bad operation. So long-winded way to say, yes, Shador needs to work on it, but they did him no favors in that game. So, sorry, let me get off my high horse. let's get to it. Let's get to the next one. Let me check my rundown real quick. Shout out to y'all for being here. Shout out to y'all for these questions. These questions, they're amazing. They really go to that next level of explaining what I see and what's happening. And then I always say one of my best qualities is my recall and my memory, just to be able to break things down. So if you don't believe me, just look it up. Let's get to the next one. So now we have, when I saw this, I believe I saw this on Monday. This might be their Monday show. I saw this from UCSS, and immediately I knew what my topic for the week was going to be. So let's go. This is going to be bull.
For everybody,
the city
that's
Uncle Rico.
Everybody that's mad about Shador Sanders' situation is now taking it out on Arch Manning. And they're both victims of this whole thing. It's
I
so
keep
silly.
Trying to tell you, this is what happens when you be prognosticating next year. Is where our Savior comes
from. Well, listen.
He shall walk on water next year.
Jimmy and A.B. was at the game.
First of all. Hosted at the game.
And they wasn't there to see Julius
Saint. First of all, I don't think anybody's been saying Arch Manning was the Savior.
Oh, it was.
Because everybody thought he was going to stay in college. Number two.
This is what happens. So when somebody's out the loop and they just say something, what's the biggest sports show? The biggest sports show is First Take. My next clip is from First Take. My next clip is from First Take. Bull doesn't know what he's talking about. A lot of times, Bull is in his own world, and I can understand it. Because, you know, when you make content and you make sports content, a lot of people, they have a hard time looking at other people's sports takes because they don't want their views to be kind of muddied by someone else's takes if they watch them enough. Me, I'm stubborn enough to not change just because I see seven people say the same thing. Everybody isn't designed that way, so I can watch other things, and that's why I'm able to put on this style of show where I'm taking you all across the board with all the different things that I'm showing you and their different takes, and I can also get my take, and my takes don't just morph into takes that I've heard. So Bull is just out of the loop here. He is out of the loop. Let me get to you, Beast. I'm going to be watching all Cleveland games. Beast, I will too. That is a perfect segue to this. I'll be live for all Cleveland Browns games, giving you my live analysis. If you've been there before, Beast, you've been there. Jeffrey, you've been there. I'm giving real-time analysis. And what I've learned is that's the difference. So people can watch the game film a million times and then give you analysis after the fact. I'm calling things as I see them. Live during the game. Parcell, the Bengals win score 31-17. I disagree, and that's okay. We don't have to agree on that. I think this is going to be a one score game. This is going to be a one score game. And do I have it set for today? I'll just give it to you right off the top of the dome. I don't know if I have a set for today. So the reason why I believe it's going to be a one-score game is because my three keys to victory, and I wasn't going to get into Sunday, so if you watch on Sunday, you're going to hear this on Sunday as well before the game. My three keys to victory. When you look at the things that the Browns have done to beat the Bengals, they have their defensive line has dominated. They have sped up Joe Burrow's clock, and they have forced them to not be able to get the deep shots off when the Browns have won. The Browns have also been able to run the ball and maintain ball control and time of possession. And the last thing they've been able to do is when they win a turnover battle. They win a turnover battle. So if we were looking at the two defenses, nobody has much faith in the Bengals defense. People have more faith in some of the players that are on the Browns in defense. So my three keys to victory, the Browns have to win the turnover battle. They have to win the time of possession based on running the ball. And they also have to get pressure on Joe Burrow to speed up his clock. They do those three things. It's a one-score game. I don't think they'll lose by 14 points. So
Shout out to you. I disagree, and those are my reasons why. And Parcell, you got to give me my keys to victory super early because I wasn't going to get those till Sunday. So shout out to you for the question. But I stay ready. I stay ready. So shout out to you. Let's get back to Bull and how G. Bush is going to let him know what's really going on.
His grandfather did.
But he claimed
number
he shut that down.
Number two, one game doesn't mean he can't play.
I mean, I agree with that.
Let's do a whole topic on this.
There we go. All right, we'll get to it later.
Didn't read the rundown.
I read the rundown.
Ms. Brown, that round of applause is for you. They don't be knowing what they be talking about, then they make stuff up. You are exactly correct. That is exactly what Bull did there. I've called out Bull for doing this multiple times, and it's because he didn't do the research, so he didn't know. So if you notice, I go in-depth on things I know about. If it's something I don't know about, you're not going to hear me try to give you a five-minute answer on something I didn't look into. All right, so we got Jeffrey. We wasn't losing by 15 points last year. If we had a kicker, we would have won more games. Special teams let the Browns down last year. Dustin Hopkins missed he missed way too many kicks. Dustin Hopkins was way too many kicks. That's why he's not on the team now. Secondly, our special teams was trash last year. We gave up long kick and punt returns last year. We gave up that long punt return to the Cincinnati Bengals. So our special teams was trash. Our special teams has to be better. Beast, I've never watched a Cleveland Browns game ever. Man, oh man. Beast, shout out to you. That means you're not a longtime Browns fan, and that means you saved yourself a lot of heartache. A lot of heartache, pain, and suffering. I've been a Cleveland Browns fan my whole life. I've been watching the Browns my whole life. Growing up as a kid, it was a big deal on Sundays. My mama cooked. Everybody comes to the house. We all watch the Browns game. So we did this. My parents still do this now to this day, watching every Browns game. And this was before I moved out of state. Still. So it's a funny meme that was going around a couple years ago that said women should date a Browns fan because you know they're loyal because of how bad the Browns been. So that's us taking our L. Joe Thomas and Johnny Manziel interview. Was it on Johnny Manziel's podcast that he has, Jeffrey? Let me know if it was on Johnny Manziel's podcast so I know where to find it at. I'll definitely check it out for sure. Definitely. I'll check it out later on today. So where are we going next? What I got next for y'all? Do I need anything else from UCSS? Let's see.
He had to get it in. We will get to the Guardians later.
All right. That's all we got from UCSS. Just wanted to, that little clip right there sparked my mind, and I designed my whole show based on that little clip, and then more things just played into it. Another thing, Bull said, nobody had Arch Manning, nobody talked about him that way. Not so fast, my friend, because they were talking about Arch Manning that way. What? Let me find this. All right, let's put this together. I missed a clip, but that's all right. We stay ready. So I'm going to get to them talking about not Johnny Manziel. I got Johnny on the brain. I'm going to get to First Take. That Ravens Forever, that's for a later topic. But let me just pull this up real quick. So First Take.
30 passes for 170 yards.
I'm going to play more of this than I normally would. Okay. All right, cool, Jeffrey. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to look it up and check it out. And then what I'll do is I'll give my take on it pregame to the Brown show. I'm probably going to start that Brown show like 15 minutes before kickoff. I want to just get my keys to victory. Parcell got me to say my keys to victory early. And then I'll put that on the docket where I'll give my take on Joe Thomas and Johnny Manziel. All right, so I found it here. I got the clip ready. This is actually a longer clip. I'm going to play more of this than I normally do because this is showing that Bull is just talking. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So earlier when I said First Take is the biggest show, they were talking about him in this way. When I said those things, that goes directly against what Bull said, and we're going to see.
One touchdown, one interception. RC had a lot to say after Arch's debut.
Arch Manning, period, point blank, is neither a generational nor transcendent talent. Arch Manning can't run like Lenora Sellers. He can't throw like Garrett Nussmeier or Bryce Underwood. He's not Trevor Lawrence. He's not Caleb Williams. Those guys were what people felt like were generational, can't miss college quarterbacks.
So I'll start by saying this. I don't always agree with anybody 100% of the time. I don't disagree with anybody 100% of the time. Now, Ryan Clark, I have disagreed with a lot of his takes in the past. This take I agree with because he's going to the core of what they're saying. He's saying Arch Manning was never viewed as a generational prospect or talent, and generational talents, usually you hear about them in college. I mean, you hear about them in high school, and then in college, they take off and you hear about them. That's not what we heard with Arch Manning. The only thing we heard was about his last name. We didn't hear anything else. We didn't say he does this well, or this well. We didn't see him do this, or this well. I went back and I watched all those quarterbacks tape from this week. I watched the whole games, every snap they took. Arch Manning, when they're going to talk about his athleticism, Sam Levitt and Lenore Sellers are way more physically talented than Arch Manning. I can go down the whole list of guys who have a better arm than Arch Manning. Most of them have better arms or equivalent or better arms than Arch Manning out of those top eight that I reviewed and looked at. So I'm not seeing generational talent from there. I'm also a big knock I have personally on Arch Manning is his fundamentals are not what they should be for someone who grew up in the Mannings and going to their passing academies and all those things. So I'm not putting Arch Manning up there, but let's see. This is going to be long because it's going to be, I've never seen Stephen A. Smith and Molly not talk for so long on First Take, but let's go.
Hey, Dan, are you done taking notes?
He's been texting about this like all weekend.
Okay, so after his debut and what we saw, do you consider Arch Manning a generational quarterback talent?
100%.
Can you define to me what that means?
Well, generational talent would be that you have physical attributes that are rare and unique. And Arch Manning 1,000% has that. And it's not a conversation. One, when did 6'4", 225 pounds, 4'5", 4'6", in the 40.
None of those things.
100%. He's 100% 6'4", 220 plus pounds, and is like 4'5", 4'6", in the 40. Got clocked at 21 miles an hour on GPS. When did that not become at the quarterback spot, generational physical ability, let alone elite, rare bloodlines when it comes to the quarterback position? That's generational. That doesn't mean that.
We don't believe you, Dan. You need more people. Jeffrey, let me get your message here. Arch Manning should be farther along than what he is. How you have two great uncles teaching you how to play quarterback and you still don't have it fully down. Right there. Let's go. Full victory lap. That's my biggest critique of Arch Manning is he doesn't have the fundamentals down. His fundamentals should be so far ahead because your two uncles were at two opposite ends of the spectrum. Peyton Manning didn't have the arm talent of Eli Manning, which is sound crazy, but he had the brain. So all his fundamentals were great. Eli had more arm talent. So you had that combination of them teaching you. So you got a guy who's teaching you. I don't take anything Dan say. This dude said Dylan Gabriel had a good game even when he had the interception and the fumble. You are correct. earlier in the show, Beast, I said, look at who they protect. I noticed it right away. Dan Orlovsky was the first one on the biggest show trying to protect Dylan Gabriel. Dan Orlovsky on the biggest show is the first one trying to protect the Manning name. He the first one. So look at who they protect. You learn how they view people based on how they protect them, even when they make mistakes. Now, so we never heard nobody say Arch Manning was a generational physical talent. We've never heard anybody say that. He used height. Is Arch Manning the only 6'4", 6'5", quarterback prospect that's in college that's draft eligible? No. So if we're going to use height, you got to put all the guys who are 6'4 and up in there. He said 200. At first he said like 230. Then he went down to 220. Then he said 220 to 230. He jumped around on the weight. So now let's put every quarterback who's in that similar weight group in there. Now he said 4.5 to 4.6 speed. Let's put every quarterback who falls in that range in there, and then we will see how many guys fall in that range. What Dan Orlovsky is doing, he's casting a wide net so he can include Arch Manning. I told y'all, Lenore Seller, Sam Levitt, way better athletes than Arch Manning. Way better. It's not close. It's not close. If you look at Sam Levitt, he has like a 52-yard run for a touchdown that he had last week. He plays for Arizona State, by the way, if you're not sure the team. Also, his second touchdown run was just crazy. He got wheels. The athleticism is there. It's way better than Arch Manning. When I watched Arch Manning film, I was like sneaky athletic. I wasn't saying, man, he's the most athletic quarterback in college. When I saw Sam Levitt, Lenore Sellers, I said these are the two most athletic quarterbacks. Arch Manning isn't there. They're on a level past Arch Manning he can't get to. So that's one. Let's see what else he's going to try to come up with. And remember, Bull said nobody was putting Arch Manning in this category. That was wrong, Bull. You just not out here. You ain't outside. Bull, if you ain't outside, leave it alone. Leave it to people who outside who know what's going on. Let's go, Dan.
That he's going to become a Hall of Famer, but that's generational talent. When we're talking about 21 miles per hour on GPS, that's what, and this is said with all due respect and admiration, that's Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson type GPS numbers, 21 miles an hour. So that's what, he's a generational talent. And I know everyone got caught up in the week one performance and all that. I can go through a list of a lot of cats in their first college starts against real opponents, not against less opponents, real opponents.
Sorry, Dan, I got to cut you off. It's so hard to get through this. Jeffrey, oh my goodness. Sometimes you just so in tune with the people who are in the chat that they are reading your mind. They are reading your mind, and they are beating you to your thoughts. Anthony Richardson was the example that I was going to go to. So let's get to, for everybody that's listening to the podcast, Jeffrey says, Anthony Richardson, Jameis Winston, buff, tall, bigger dudes, they are not generational talents. That is correct. Everything that he's going to try to say, every reason he's going to give for Arch Manning being a generational talent, Anthony Richardson is better than Arch Manning at. He's slightly taller than him. He's more athletic than him, has a better arm than him, and is faster than him. Does that make Anthony Richardson a generational talent? It's weak. And remember, this is important. This is the biggest sports show. When the biggest sports show is trying to convince us somebody is markedly better than they really are, it's an issue. It's an issue. So shout out to Jeffrey. You read my mind there. Let's see what else he got to say.
Opponents having much less numbers statistically than Arch Manning.
It's not about, but that's the thing though, Dan. Like, you're trying to play this numbers game.
No.
We don't have to play a numbers game.
But that was what got caught up in.
But the thing is this though, we don't have to play a miles per hour game to know that Arch Manning running the football ain't like Lenora Sellers running the football at South Carolina.
Sure.
Right? We don't have to play a numbers game to know that Arch Manning running the football wasn't like Jaden Daniels running the football versus Florida when he went for 250.
Yeah.
Those things are not the same. I don't care what this little little vest you wear on top of your nipple say? And what I hate about it is I think Arch Manning is going to be a really good quarterback. Right. I think Arch Manning is talented. I love that he got dog in him. But generational talent is different. Who are generationally talented quarterbacks to you?
I mean, present day or college kids?
If you go present
day. Like in the NFL?
In the NFL. Who's a generation?
Lamar.
He ain't Lamar.
I'm not saying he's Lamar.
But it's the other thing, though. The people you're comparing him to, right? Like, let's just talk about the people you're comparing him to. You know what Lamar Jackson had by this point in college? A Heisman.
But Lamar.
Man, oh, man. He hit in him with that ether. I agree, Jeffrey. Doesn't mean he doesn't have upside or talent. He's just not generational. That is a complete fact. This is, see, what y'all are starting to see is something that I saw some months ago. I started to see they dance around with their terms. So people change the terminology to make it mean something different when they need it for their argument. Based on Dan Orlovsky's take, so many guys would be generational talents. The problem is the entire concept of generational talent means it only happens in a generation. So it can't be generational if we can just put a wide net and we could cast 30 people that fall under that. That means it's not generational. That means that's the new norm. That's where he's missing. So these guys, they try to switch up and change how to use terminology to complete their argument. Dan, you're wrong. That's just it. That's just it. If he was a generational talent, he would have played last year. If he was a generational talent, he would have played last year. That's just a fact. That's all it is nothing more, nothing less. He has upside. He could not beat out Quinn Ewers. We're going to see this week. Now, I like to be the person that tells you how I feel in real time and get it out there before the event happens. And then I can't wait to hit this button, y'all. I can't wait to hit that button where I go back and I rewind it to something I said 3 or 4 months ago. And then finally people start to get it. I can't wait. I live for it. Y'all don't understand. I live for those moments. Arch Manning is playing at noon on Saturday. He's playing San Jose State. Arch Manning is going to throw for 200 plus yards and 3 touchdowns. They're going to make sure he has a good comeback game. They're going to make sure of it to build up his confidence. The problem is nobody is looking at your tape versus San Jose State to see if that determines if you're generational or not. Nobody's doing it. Jeffrey, I wish DJ Lagway was eligible for the draft because he has the upside to be generational. Hey, Jeffrey, you wanted something. You wanted something. Even the way you worded that is great. See how you worded that? Upside to be generational. Because then that means you got to have talent above and beyond everybody else, and then the ability to get there, which he still got the ability because he's a true sophomore. So he got the ability. He got the ability to get there. Strong arm, athletic. So he got the ability. That's the difference. You worded that perfect, and you're not wording that to protect the take that you're going to say down the line. So many of their takes, they got to word it a certain way so it protects them later on when they go back to it. And they do that because they don't have a philosophy with how they do things. If you came into this argument, Dan Orlovsky, and you had, see, Dan Orlovsky was going to use the numbers that guys who are generational in the NFL, he was going to use their first games and try to say that's the reason why it's okay for Arch Manning. He should have had a list of top prospects. 5-star guys coming out of high school, going into college, and use their first games. Because those guys are more likely on their way to being generational. Not we're going to take Lamar. Remember, and when I went back to my clip and I said don't believe the lies from months ago, in there, I called out Bill Polian for telling Lamar to switch and become a wide receiver. How are you telling generational talent to change positions from quarterback to receiver? So you can't use Lamar and call him a generational talent in college when they wanted him to switch positions. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And RC just killed him when he said, look at that. What did Lamar have at this point in Heisman? So it's just all these situations, they just keep stacking up, and these guys keep taking these L's. Let's see if we need anything else from this.
Played a lot more. He had stopped Lamar.
Because he was that good.
RC, Lamar's first start, he went 9 of 20 with a pick.
This is third start. Stop saying it's
against a real opponent.
It's his third.
Against a real opponent.
And also, too.
Okay, so we can go to
year in college.
But he.
See how they dancing? Remember, look at who they defend. He said it's his first start. No, it's not. It's his third start. This is his third year in college. He couldn't beat out Quinn Ewers last year. Anthony Richardson, man, you got some good takes. Maybe that's what Anthony Richardson needs to do, move to tight end. I don't think Anthony Richardson needs to move to tight end. I'm giving y'all some stuff that I'm thinking about later on. So one of the criteria that I'm going to have when I'm rating these quarterbacks coming out of college and how I view them going into the NFL, they're going to need to have a minimum of 30 starts in college. 30 starts is going to be the number where I'm saying they got to have 30 starts in college. You got to get to that number however you can. Anthony Richardson, I believe he had between 10 and 13 college starts. That's not enough. He has not seen enough football at a competitive level for him to be good. Anthony Richardson is going to need to go to Philadelphia Eagles as a backup and just learn. He's going to need to learn for 3 years. 3 years. He's going to need 3 years of learning. So, Quinn, do you think Quinn Ewers deserved to be a seventh round pick? I thought he was going to be a top pick. When I watch Quinn Ewers, I always, in my mind, thought nothing special. I think I grade guys on a harder scale because I know that the NFL is way harder. So when guys routinely miss guys that are open, I say that's a knock. When guys don't have good fundamentals, I say that's a knock. When you play around all this talent, remember Texas sent 12 people to the NFL. When you play around all this talent, talk about multiple wide receivers and all this stuff, you need to jump off the page. You need to dominate. If you are not dominating, what are we doing? You're going to be a late round pick. To me, it'll be hard pressed for anybody to find when Quinn Ewers dominated. And I just was like, he gonna make it to the NFL, but I don't see it. I think Quinn Ewers should have did the Carson Beck. He could have got about, and I'm not just saying this now. I said this months ago that Carson Beck did the smart thing. He was going to be a top guy, and Carson Beck ended up coming back and going to get that bag. Carson Beck is making more this year than Quinn Ewers is going to make in his whole contract, his whole four-year contract in Miami. So, let me read your next one. Something happened, Quinn Ewers. How do you go from moving the ball down the field 1 year to throwing checkdowns the next year? You're not able to read the defense once they get film on you. You're not able to read it. They confuse them. It's that simple. Guys who are consistently starters. So that's why I don't understand the stuff with Shador. Shador put so much film out there that guys knew what he was going to do and he still was able to do it. When you're at the end of the game and they know you got to drive and they know you got to pass and you're able to successfully do it, I think that puts you in a higher category. Once you get film on these guys, they don't look the same. If you watch my video from Tuesday where I'm talking about the quarterbacks, I say in there I have bias with Carson Beck because he played at Georgia and he didn't win a national championship. And people might say, oh, that's outrageous. But no, Georgia sends so many guys to the NFL every year. So many guys. So I hold not Alabama anymore, but I used to hold Alabama quarterbacks to a higher standard because they're sending so many guys to the NFL. So, you know, that's how I look at those guys. I think that I'm not going to do it now, but around the draft time, I'm going to give a breakdown of I'm thinking it's going to be between 3 and 5 things that I want to see. That's my baseline for quarterbacks, that how I would grade or how I would view them coming into the NFL. And one of them is going to be, you got to have a certain number of starts. You have to get better year over year, and you got to dominate lesser competition. Dominate. So if you look at Jeremiah Smith, everybody saying Jeremiah Smith could already come out and be in the NFL. He is dominating talent that's not close to him. Dominating. Look at Caleb Downs. Caleb Downs stands off the page. You see him making plays all over the place. You see how they can move him around and use him on defense. That's what I want when I'm saying these guys are first round, high draft picks, changing stuff around. I view quarterbacks that same way. One of my big knocks on Fernando Mendoza was he didn't jump off the page, playing lesser competition, and he plays for Indiana, by the way, and in the red zone, he couldn't get touchdowns. Another thing, everybody said this year was a good quarterback class. My bot got you, but I got you. Another thing, everybody said this year was a good quarterback class, but I thought a lot of rookie quarterbacks looked good in the preseason. I agree. So as I started to dig deeper into how the drafting goes, y'all know, man, I do a ton of research. It's out there. I'm gonna look it up. So it's almost like every other year. So if you have, let's just use the 2 years, 2024's draft. When you got 5 guys go that early, it doesn't matter what happens that next year, they're going to say the class is not good because they are protecting those quarterbacks that just got drafted. So now, if you notice this year, oh man, all the rookies trash. And then they say, but next year, them the quarterbacks that you want. So when they play that game, I look at it and I'm like, okay, this is something. I'm always mindful of how people play these games. So I'm going to use my own eyes and I'm going to look at these quarterbacks. So y'all get the gist of it. Y'all get the gist of what I was saying why I brought up Bull. Then after Bull, we brought up this with Arch Manning because Bull's trying to say he doesn't know who's doing it. Everybody's doing it. The biggest show is doing it. Let's see what we got next. I got a couple more topics to hit before we wrap this thing up. Oh man, Beast, man, let me tell you, Beast. Beast, Jeffrey, Miss Brown, your questions and comments have been so timely. That is the next subject. The reason why the Cleveland Browns tickets are not selling for the first home game, which the Browns is emailing everybody on their email list saying we got tickets, is because for the entire offseason, these are the things we heard. This year don't matter. We heard We heard Jason Lloyd continuously say this year don't matter. We heard Tony Grossi say we're looking forward to next year. We heard all these guys keep coming out saying this year don't matter. Low projected win totals. No excitement for the year. The excitement that they have, they buried the excitement on the third on the depth chart for Dillon Gabriel and propped him up. Is no excitement because they're punting on the season in our face. When they're putting out, oh, this is a developmental year, we're going to see what we got. The first weekend of college football, you got the Browns brass at the Ohio State-Texas game. They also went to the LSU-Clemson game. And it said that Jimmy Haslam also went to see Lenore Sellers. What's to get excited for? It's nothing to get excited for. That's actually one of my clips. It was on the radio. They were saying, man, there's something up. Nobody cares. Yeah, nobody cares because how can I listen to you for 5 months tell me this season doesn't matter? And then closer to the season, your actions show the season doesn't matter. And the person that people will get excited for, you don't give them a fair shot. You bury them on the bench. And then you want to tell me, come to the first game. How could all those things matter? How could we're looking for the future, but we start Joe Flacco? We got rookies people want to see. We're not, the rookies aren't ready. We're looking for the future. We're looking for towards a quarterback in 2026. That whole combination of those things are the reason why there's no excitement. Nobody cares. Everybody's written off the year. You know what? The big following, the Shedeur Sanders fans, the new to the NFL fans, you know what they're doing now? They're watching Colorado because they still tapped into Colorado. They're going to look at guys from Colorado who are actually playing. They're going to watch Travis Hunter's game. They're going to watch all those guys. And they're also going to be looking at how these college quarterbacks do this year, because we had to hear that all of them were better than the quarterbacks that came out this year. There's no reason to watch. There's no reason to watch for a lot of people. I totally get it. I totally get it and understand it. Because you told me it don't matter. So how many times can I hear you tell me it doesn't matter before I believe you and say, you know what, maybe it don't matter. I'm not going to waste my time and do it. This is the Browns coming off of a 3-win season saying this season don't matter. Nobody's excited about that. Nobody is, you know, oh, man, we got to see what the Browns are going to do. Nobody's saying that. That leads me into my next thing I got for y'all. Let me get this lined up right. So this is Tony Grossi. This goes right into your question, Beast.
So many unknowns regarding this next year that you keep referring to and that the Browns have had their eye on. Number one, what if you win 7-8 games?
Dexter, Cleveland Browns tickets isn't selling fast because Shedeur ain't starting. It's besides Shedeur. Shedeur is part of the equation. But being a lifelong Browns fan, the first game of the season is the most optimistic Browns fans are going to be. The home opener is usually the main game that sells out. I'm telling you, my whole life, the home opener sells out. I can recall back to 99. You never have a problem getting getting fans to that first game. You never have a problem. They wrote off this year. They buried Shedeur on the depth chart. There's no excitement. Everybody is calling what game Joe Flacco is going to get benched so we can see the rookies. The excitement is gone. There's nothing there. There's no reason. Now the difference is you look at the economy. You look at the economic circumstances. People are not willing to spend their hard-earned money in harder, tough times economically to see a team that the team is putting out there that they're writing off for the year. It's too many things happening at once that are causing people to say, you know what? I'm going to keep my money in my pocket. I'm watching from the house. Excitement's not there.
Have the Browns winning 8 games. You're not getting a top 15 pick. If Jacksonville has a decent season and you have a decent season, you're going to have 15-21. You think you're going to be able to instantly jump up to 1, 2, or 3? No, you're not. There's going to be teams that suck that are going to covet these quarterbacks that you talk about, which did not look good in week 1. You're automatically assuming that we're going to be able to go to the top of the draft to get any quarterback we want. That is pie in the sky.
Well, Riz, I am willing to give up the 2027 1 in order to do it.
Whoa! 3 1s for Cade Klubnik? Boy, this is not. Tony, what could go wrong?
We're going to give Tony the buzzer. The reason why we're giving Tony Grossi the buzzer, I'm not advertising for FanDuel. The reason why we're going to give Tony the buzzer is because if it's a generational prospect that's coming out, number one, there's no amount of trade capital you could give to you. There's no amount of trade capital you can give to a team who needs a quarterback to get them to move. When Joe Burrow came out, the Browns tried to get Joe Burrow. They tried to get Joe Burrow. The reason why the Browns didn't get Joe Burrow was because Cincinnati wouldn't move off the pick. So people can try to get you to move off of your pick. They can try to get you to, you know, get rid of this guy. It's not happening. To me, this is my way too early take. Just looking at these quarterbacks, I think it's going to be two quarterbacks that come out of this draft that I would say teams are really going to want to want. I'm not going to say no names yet, but I think it's going to be two of them that people would move for. Dexter, you might be right. He also likes Lenelosaurus a lot. Sellers a lot. Lenora Sellers. He likes him a lot. So it's going to be two. But this is the problem. The Colts are going to be bad. The Saints are going to be bad. Who else is going to be bad? The Jets might slip up and be really bad. So you got a couple teams there. You think the Saints are going to trade away a top pick if it's only two good ones? You think the Jets are going to do it? You think the Colts are going to do it? No, it's not happening. You would need for somebody to say, oh, we're going to trade off. You would need something to happen like Chicago Bears. You would need the Chicago Bears when they fleeced Carolina, when Carolina wanted to move up to one to get Bryce. Because you already either have a quarterback or whatever. But it's not happening. They're not moving. All right, let me get to your comments. What is Tony on? I would not give up any future draft picks for a young quarterback that's not guaranteed. I totally agree. I'm not spending future capital. This team got too many holes for you to give up that much capital for one player. Even if it is a quarterback. So it's just a bad thing. This goes into, I think the Saints got their guy Spencer Rattler. He looked good last year with no offensive weapons. Jeffrey, I'll say you got more faith in Spencer Rattler than me. I think they're going to be bad. And I think they are going to, I just think they're going to be bad. I don't got faith in Spencer Rattler. I mean, he was okay at South Carolina. I don't got faith in him. He shouldn't have been in that close of a quarterback competition knowing he had NFL experience over his belt. He should have easily beat out Tyler Shuck. I look at competitions like that where you're not leaps and bounds ahead of the other guy. It came down to, you know, the final seconds before they name him the starter. That shows me he didn't just clearly beat him out. So I'm not tying myself to a player who doesn't dominate. You got to see domination. When you look at the top quarterbacks in the league, they dominate. So I don't see that when I'm looking at these guys. I got a couple more things to get to. Where is it? Amari Cooper announces his retirement. This is one of those situations where you got to give AB props. Andrew Berry, got to give him his props. Andrew Berry decided against signing Amari Cooper to a long extension a couple seasons ago, and it looks like he was right. So Amari Cooper didn't look as good as he did on the Browns in Buffalo. We actually got the same value or a higher value of pick from Buffalo. So that was a plus in the trade for us. And now Amari Cooper has retired less than a week after he signed with the Las Vegas Raiders. So you got to give AB his props. It's funny. We got people who assume that I don't like AB. I think AB does things well. I think AB's best skill is his ability to trade and knowing who to pay and when. So those are his best traits to me. He does seem like he knows when to move on from people. He does seem like that. So those are his positives. Draft, he needs to get better. So that's how I view AB. So it looks like he was right on that. The last thing I got, which is kind of just crazy. So if you are new to the Browns lost their team to Baltimore. The Cleveland Browns were no more. They moved them to Baltimore. And they are celebrating The Ravens are celebrating that 30 season celebration in week two against the Browns, which is just crazy that you're going to just kind of, you know, stump on the grave of the team that was lost, you know, for you to actually have a team. So they doing this kind of dirty, man. They doing this dirty with that one. So we're going to be there like this. It's just a bad look. They doing this dirty with that. So just kind of crazy. Couple quick announcements. I'll be live. I'm going live on Sunday for the Cleveland Browns game. I'll be live for every Browns game. This week, since Jeffrey gave me some homework, I will be starting that live stream up at 12:45. Kickoff is right around 1:03. Yeah, he's definitely another thing. Underrated Andrew Berry skill, finding undrafted free agents. I agree with that. This year, it looks like he's got a lot better. He did find Ronnie Hickman. Gage Larvadan is one of my favorites. Aiden Huntington, I want to say his name correctly. He was number 66. He changed his jersey number. I noticed right away that he was going to make the team. So he has been doing some better things that way. You know, it's just funny because, you know, people would say, I never say anything good about Andrew Berry. It's just not true. They haven't watched enough of my stuff. Andrew Berry, when he pays guys big money, he is always paying them right before the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Ravens got to pay him. When they gave that big money to Deshaun, who was next up in the line? Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. So he is constantly giving it to them. Every time he pays Myles Garrett, who's next up to get paid? T.J. Watt, Trey Hendrickson. He's always screwing them with how he signs players. I think that's a plus because you are no, hey, we got the money to spend and y'all don't want to spend like we will. So it's some stuff that he does well. Him trading for receivers, most of his trades for receivers hit. The only one I would say didn't hit was Elijah Moore. And that seems more so the offensive scheme that we were running. Just wasn't as good because when we got Joe Flacco in there, he played a lot better. Elijah Moore did. So, you know, it's just he paid David Njoku early. So, you're right, Jerry Jeudy got him on a good contract. So, it's some things that he does well, but just because, you know, I say he does those things well, you're not going to sit up here and tell me that he's the best GM when it comes to drafting. It's just the receipts are not there for how he is drafted. Now, some aspects of getting talent, he's really good at. But drafting, I'm not going to say it. So that's Andrew Berry. That's the Baltimore Ravens. This has been the show. Shout out to definitely my regulars for tapping in. Mrs. Brown, Beast, Jeffrey. Shout out to y'all for always tapping in. Shout out to y'all for always asking great questions, giving great insights. I value y'all opinions. Definitely appreciate y'all. I'm going to check out that Joe Thomas and Johnny Manziel. Try to check that out today. Give you my insights on it on Sunday. Sunday, I'll be going live to give you my analysis. Browns versus Bengals, Battle of Ohio. I'll give you all that live. So 12:45 Eastern Standard Time. I'll see y'all on Sunday. It's been another great episode. Shout out to y'all. Peace. Thank you.